Hey, everyone. Welcome to Taking It Down. If this is your first time to listen, we're the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Discussion Podcast. And you're now listening to Episode 8. I'm the host, Blaine Duncan. This episode just happens to be all about movies, two in particular. Today, I'm going to be joined by Kelly Duncan to talk Joker, which was released October 4th. So hopefully everyone's had time to go out and see that one. A little later, I'm going to be talking to Donovan Reinwald, and he and I will converse about the Breaking Bad movie that was just released on Netflix on Friday called El Camino. So on this episode, we're sort of discussing two films that seem to warrant brief thoughts on maybe whether they need to exist at all, which we'll kind of get into, I think, with each one. But we'll get into it. Thanks for tuning in to Taking It Down. All right, I want to welcome writer from the Alabama Take, Kelly Duncan. Kelly published a piece on John Green's podcast, like reviewing John Green's podcast recently, and you can find that up on the website, so be sure to look that up. But she is here today to talk the most recent DC Universe comic movie, if you can call it that, which was Joker. It really isn't quite anything like a comic book movie, and even calling it a DC comics movie feels a little odd, but we might get into some of that stuff too. So, hey, Kelly.
Hey.
And what was the name of that John Green podcast that you wrote about?
The Anthropocene Reviewed. The Anthropocene Reviewed is the one that I did the review on. And even since then, I read his recent book, Turtles All the Way Down, and loved it. So I'm excited about that one, too.
Okay. So, but you can check out the What to Think About His podcast on the Alabama Take on our website. Okay. Let's talk Joker, though.
Okay.
Joker, directed by Todd Phillips, who directed, I think, all three Hangover movies, and Old School, and that movie, I think, Due Date.
What an odd mix.
I know. Right, exactly. But, you know, he's quality director, especially in the comedy realm, and this... I'll have to look it up, but this might be his first foray into sort of dramatic directing. But what, just overall thoughts before we get into any spoiler territory, in case anyone's listening that hasn't seen it, we'll just do general broad thoughts. So what did you think about Joker?
Well, you and I always go and see any kind of comic book movies together, you know, superhero related movies together. So I was excited about this one. I didn't really know a whole lot going in about it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did not, because I don't know that I would have gone. But I'm just going to say that it made me very uncomfortable. I'm sure that we'll talk about the reasons why, but I was extremely uncomfortable the whole time. What about you?
I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. Maybe more so than, I think it's maybe a love-hate thing. You're either going to kind of love it or kind of hate it.
Right.
Somewhere in those ranges. I don't think it's going to be a middle-of-the-road sort of movie for anybody. But I thought it was really good for a few reasons that sort of put it over the top. And let's get into some specifics of the movie. So if you haven't listened and you're... Excuse me, if you haven't watched the movie, if you haven't seen the movie and you're still listening, you might want to pause and come back at a later time. But so you said you were uncomfortable. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, I just have such a heart for the story that it was trying to tell, and just couldn't stand to see somebody down on their luck be just literally and figuratively beaten down time and time again, and not have a way out. Like, I just felt like the whole time I was sitting there thinking, like, how is he going to, there's no way for him to get out of this besides what he ends up doing, really. And at one point I was really, like, literally digging around in my purse for my anxiety medication, because I just couldn't stand to see what was happening to him, just this downward spiral. And we learn later on in the movie that, you know, he was abused as a child, and had some head trauma that was, you know, influencing his mental health. And then he didn't have any access to any kinds of ways out, and I just couldn't hardly stand it. It's just, you know, you can't put into words really just the despair that he must have felt in every direction that he turned.
Do you think that it was playing too much to sympathy for an anti-hero or a violent person kind of thing?
No, I mean, I thought that really honestly, I thought that it was kind of a heavy-handed agenda as far as, you know, access to health care for the poor. And that was really easy for me to see, which that's been on my mind lately with elections coming up and debates going on and all that kind of stuff. So maybe that was why I was thinking on it, but I just felt like it was just right there in your face. Like, this person needs help. They've cut this program that would give him access to medication. You know, his therapist even says, they don't care about you. They don't care about me. And referring to wealthy people as the people in charge. And there was one scene in particular where he's looking in the mirror, which he does a lot, which I thought was interesting in itself. Mm-hmm. But there's one part where he's looking in the mirror and he opens his mouth and you can see a cavity in his mouth.
Yeah.
And that just really struck me as, this person doesn't have, you know, basic healthcare, you know, just very basic healthcare. When he's beaten to smithereens and has broken bones, it doesn't even touch on the fact that he can't go to the hospital or the doctor or anything like that. He just deals with it. So I think that more than the playing on the anti-hero, it was more of a, you know, political commentary or, you know, socio-political commentary in the whole.
Yeah. Actually, there are complaints from critics, professional critics, about, well, one of the complaints is from David Edelstein from New York Magazine, and I think he does some NPR work too, but he talked about how it was just a one-note movie that only got louder. It was like playing the same note until it just got to the end, which I think you might be touching on a little bit. But another complaint I've read from critics are that the movie doesn't take a stance, that it could be much more political with the haves and have-nots, and it could make a more solid comment on mental health or just a comment on some other things. But it never really, and even Arthur Fleck, the character of Joker, he turns into the Joker, says, I don't have a political agenda at one point.
Yeah, well, he doesn't, but obviously the writers and directors do. I mean, I totally disagree with that. I felt like that every wealthy person on the movie was vilified. Even the, you know, not as wealthy, but the Wall Street guys on the bus were just horrible humans, you know, which I don't think is really realistic. You know, I mean, not every wealthy person is a horrible person, of course, but I mean, it was very politically charged to me.
I found the Wall Street guys on the subway a little ham-fisted. That was one of the issues I had. That was a small issue. Like, they could have been anyone. They didn't have to be Wall Street jerks. But I'm also of the opinion that I think it's okay for a movie not to fully commit to a political position and leave it to the viewer. Critic Matt Zoller-Seitz, I think, said on Twitter once that all art is political. I don't disagree with that, really, but I'm also okay with it not saying, even though all art may be political, I'm okay with it not telling us its stance. And this one did feel like it had a stance, but it might be trying to have its cake and eat it too for it to say, oh, this is not a political film.
Right.
But I'm okay with it not being one, because it was. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't say it was enjoyable. You know, you'd said that there was really no middle of the road there, but I think I am middle of the road. I mean, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but I'm still thinking about it, you know, about a week after we saw it. And, you know, if it is art, if it is, you know, trying to strike a chord, it definitely did that. What about for you?
I liked it because of that. Yeah, exactly. Because it is, it was making a statement, and it, really, this is going to sound weird, as much as I go see comic book movies, but it didn't feel like a comic book movie.
No.
which I don't know. I'm pushed and I'm pulled in many directions with it. First of all, I'm not so sure. Going into it, I wasn't so sure that we needed a Joker backstory. That didn't seem necessary, and it just seemed kind of like we don't have anything else to do. Well, you know, but we still need to make money kind of thing.
Right.
Did you feel like you needed a Joker backstory? I mean, going in, or what? Did you care? Were you just, is that anything that you'd thought about?
I hadn't thought about it, but you know, the parts where they come out, and this is okay to go into spoilers, I guess, but.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The part in the movie that came out about him possibly being, and then confirmed probably, being Thomas Wayne's child, that was just really interesting to me because it really played on maybe the juxtaposition of the Joker and the Batman, and not always opposite, but, you know, sometimes side by side, and especially like the scene with the gate where he's reaching through and touching Bruce, who will eventually become Batman. Mm-hmm. Just kind of almost, you know, put them on what could this have been had they had equal love and, you know, equal access to basic and extravagant money, I guess, as it's going into growing up, would it have been a different story? So yeah, I think all in all, I didn't think I needed one, but then when I was there for it. I was like, okay, you know, this can really go somewhere.
I kind of took the opposite approach. Each time I was taken out of the movie a little bit, each time they'd said Gotham, because it was obviously 1979 New York, you know, that right. was the look and the feel. And every time they'd say Gotham, I thought, okay, it shook me. And I felt like putting Bruce Wayne and Thomas Wayne in there also took me out of what they're trying to do. Another choice. I'm not supposed to judge what I think should have been there more so than what's on the screen. But I think if they wanted to do that, they should have put that a more, you know, just a generic rich guy. Because I don't know, when Bruce Wayne as a kid shows up, it felt like they had to shoehorn that in order for it to be authentic to comics or something.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to ask. See, I never read the comics, so I was going to ask, was that true to the comics or not?
I don't think so. Not to my knowledge. I was also taken out a little bit by the overt grime. I think they could have toned that down. Of just the city and the look and the feel. And I was also taken out of the movie when it was so blatant a ripoff is harsh. It was so blatant a nod or homage to Taxi Driver. Have you ever seen Taxi Driver?
No, I haven't. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Which part are you talking about in particular?
Well, almost the overall plot. The disturbed guy. There were parts that they didn't really mimic of Taxi Driver, and you talked about it being a good movie, but hard to watch. That's Taxi Driver, really, a lot. But the biggest thing that I guess loved about the movie, I loved it in a way that I wouldn't. I don't know. Maybe this will make sense. It worked for me because of Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
He to me was very eerie.
Oh, absolutely. The height, I think, of his acting came for me when he was dancing, like all the dancing scenes. I was just like, wow. I mean, I was just in awe of the differences in, you know, that he and the different choices that he made as an actor. He did a great job.
Absolutely. It was mesmerizing. His dancing, they would cut, sometimes the movie would cut into a bit of him dancing after sort of a reaction to something he had done. And it was just transfixing. The second thing I would say, maybe even more transfixing, but it's definitely second on the list, if not first, was when he would laugh, his eyes wouldn't laugh.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that was just frightening.
Even more frightening when, you know, he says at the end, this is just me. This is not a disorder. This is just me. Which again, going back to, you know, it comes out that he had a brain trauma. So that would be as a child, brain trauma as a child, so that, you know, that could be related. But it was just, you just can't look away. You just can't look away when he's doing those two things.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't. And I like that his laughter was probably uncontrolled due to that, almost in a Tourette's way, that he would laugh at inappropriate moments, which he would laugh out of nervousness or anger or fear. And that to me made his laughing during the movie and even beyond, like, let's say, the 1989 Joker, when he would laugh, if you sort of apply that, when he's laughing, he's really not enjoying anything. It's right. More of that to me is pretty scary.
And he says, you know, for someone called the Joker and somebody who laughs so much, he even has a line in the movie that says, you know, he was never happy a minute of his life. He's talking to his mom. I mean, rip your heart out, you know?
Yeah. So the one thing I would have had a huge problem with was that character, Sophie, played by Zazie Beetz, I think her name is, from yes. Atlanta. Right.
Yes.
So she felt shoehorned in and completely unrealistic until you get the information at the end where he had imagined all of that, other than maybe seeing her in the elevator once.
Right, exactly.
So that made sense to me. And again, there was that creepy moment where he's in her living room and you're thinking, at the time, you're probably thinking, okay, they know each other. So she's just going to be like, why are you here? Go home. Not, why are you here? I don't know you.
Right. Can I call someone? Is your mother home? And then it just goes bad. Oh.
Yeah, it's a disturbing movie. And I think that because it is so disturbing that I liked it a lot, because I think that's what it was shooting for.
Right.
It certainly got its tone right. Whether or not it got its message right, I don't know.
I think if I was like trying to recommend or not recommend, I would just say, if you're feeling mentally stable enough to handle it, then yes. And if not, then no.
And imagine saying that about any other comic book movie.
Right, exactly.
I mean, even Logan, which is also R-rated, you wouldn't say that.
Right, exactly.
Or Deadpool, which is also R-rated. Okay. Well, you got anything else on Joker? Also, it's not the Joker; it's just Joker, which is, I found kind of odd. What any more thoughts on Joker?
I did want to touch on the talk show aspect.
Yeah, Robert De Niro plays the talk show host Murray Franklin, and yeah, go ahead.
I just wondered, you know, just in my mind, after they revealed that Sophie's character wasn't real, if the whole scene where he was in the audience and got called up to the stage, if that was even real, or if that was just something that he imagined that he could do leading up to the scene where he's actually on the show. What do you think?
Oh, I took it for not being real, even in the moment when it was happening. Like, even before you realized there were some chunks of the movie that was all in his head, that to me felt very unreal at the time.
Right. So then if that was unreal, then like you were saying, some things were forced, then Murray, you know, happening upon his comedy video was definitely a forced plot line in the movie.
Kind of. It really kind of was. Yeah. And there was more than one shoehorned kind of plot device, but I think overall, I really liked it, which is weird for me to say because I had vowed out of DC movies completely and said that I wouldn't see another one again until this one came along, and Joaquin Phoenix, I think, really caught my interest.
Right, absolutely, awesome casting.
Is he going to get the? Is he going to win an Oscar?
He should. I mean, I'm totally behind him.
I would not be against that, though. I think this year is supposed to be a pretty good Oscar race. We'll see, though. Anyway, so that's Joker. Our thoughts on it. Anything else on Joker?
That's all I got.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. And we're going to take a break. And in just a little bit, we'll be talking to Donovan Reinwald about the latest in Breaking Bad, which was a movie on
Netflix. Donovan Reinwald?
The Donovan Reinwald.
Ooh.
You can't beat him. So, thanks again, Kelly, and we'll get back to it in just a little.
Okay, bye.
Hey folks, as always, we want to say thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk about the Breaking Bad movie from Netflix in just a minute, but I want to encourage you to visit our site, thealabamatake.com, if you haven't been recently. We have a whole new look on there. We want to celebrate our existence. We've been going on for over a year. We want to give everyone an opportunity to pre-order t-shirts. So we're going to have that information up in the next few days. The pre-order for t-shirts will be going online in a day or two, maybe a little longer. Keep your eye out for it. And of course, if you're interested in getting in touch with us just in general, you can drop a line at thealabamatake@gmail.com. There's a lot to find over at the Alabama Take as far as articles. We've been sports heavy as of late, which is the case for us in fall and football in the year. But there's more stuff going on there other than sports. So, quick note about the flagship podcast, The Alabama Take. It's out there. It's in a separate podcast feed. You can find it in any podcast aggregator that you use. You can search for it on our website even. Lots of excellent interviews with Alabama artists and beyond, so you can find us there. We keep things updated on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Reach out to us. Find us. All right. We're going to get going. I am joined again this episode by Donovan Reinwald. Donovan's back. He was here with us last time. Such an excellent and thoughtful, wonderful guest. So I forced him to come back this week. And I've given him the homework assignment of watching the new Breaking Bad movie, which has the title El Camino. It's basically what happens to Jesse Pinkman just after the events of the last episode of Breaking Bad. So we're going to touch on that. We'll probably go spoiler heavy on this one. So if you haven't watched it, cue up Netflix, watch it, then come back. Okay? Donovan, what's up, man?
Well, I was pleased to be asked to do this because it gives me an excuse to do something I wanted to do anyway. But, you know, it's right. Like, I'll watch, you know, I got so many other movies to watch. I'll watch this when I get around to it. I can't remember the last time I watched a movie like 2 days within seeing it.
I know that is a
or
completely
coming out,
other.
I mean, sorry, within seeing it, that doesn't make any sense.
No. I knew what you meant. But, and that's actually a discussion that maybe we could touch on very briefly here before we get into the Breaking Bad movie, which was there's just so much. And then there's more streaming coming, Disney Plus and all that. It's almost too much. And I do like the idea of doing this podcast because it does make me stay current on a couple of things. At least every 2 weeks, I'm kind of current on something.
Yeah. And it kind of helps you prioritize, right? Like what do I really want to talk about? It kind of helps you think in that sense too. Like not just what do I want to consume? But what might I have something to say, even if it's, you know, not the most original or brilliant thing that's been said? Like, what do I want to spend some time thinking about and being in conversation with another human being about? What's worth that?
That is so true, which is actually unprompted. That's the perfect segue to what I wanted to touch on to begin was I talked to at least three people who had no idea there was going to be a Breaking Bad movie on Friday. So, did they do a poor job of marketing this?
Because I think they may have, because it kind of, like, this was one of those things that, like, I kind of remembered that it was coming out, but, you know, like, dimly, like, oh, yeah, that's a thing that's happening. And then it kind of snuck up on me. Even when you asked me if I wanted to talk about the Breaking Bad movie, I wouldn't have actually remembered it was coming out except another friend of mine had said, hey, are you going to watch this movie? Completely forgot, which is weird. Cause this feels like kind of a nice little feather in their cap. You know, Netflix gets it. AMC's not premiering it. It's not in the movie theaters. It's on Netflix.
Yeah. It felt like it was under-marketed, and it also, and I get the idea that they wanted to keep it secret and not give anything away, but I still think that there was a way to market this that would have been more prevalent than what I saw.
Even with, I was more aware that Big Mouth Season 3 was coming out than I was that, even when I fired up the old Netflix app. Part of me wonders, I have nothing to support this, and I'm not going to take the 10 seconds that it would take to actually find out if other people have experienced this. I wonder if your viewing history affects what you get advertised to about.
Oh, no, it absolutely does.
Yeah, because my wife and I share an account, and she mm-hmm. uses it much more than I do. And we skew pretty differently on what we like in many areas.
So you don't have the separate the thing where you can do the separate avatars and click on your own?
You know, we've got it. We could do that, but we had just been sharing it for so long, like way back, even before, you know, back when you could barely stream anything, that we just never split our accounts. It just doesn't, it doesn't really matter that much to
us. It's interesting. Yeah, so you might, some things might drop on the floor that you'll never find.
Right. Well, that's the really irritating thing, right, about Netflix, right, is you can't just look at everything they have. Like, did you know, for instance, that right now they have a bunch of early era Scorsese on there?
Yes, I did.
it's they great. Must,
they the must Irish, know my viewing habits.
Well, and The Irishman is coming out, too, so they're trying to push that.
Well, you and I could end up talking about that one. I'm interested in that movie.
Oh, I cannot wait. Can't wait.
And speaking of Scorsese, I was talking with Kelly about Joker in the segment before this, and I kind of introed that show with the idea of superfluous movies. So, I don't know. Is there such thing as a superfluous movie? Maybe. But
that's funny that you said that, because a lot of the reviews that I have read of people that really respect – the people that I really respect that have reviewed Joker have basically mm-hmm. said the same thing.
Yeah.
Which just – bleh. Why does it exist?
I can see that, but you know what? I ended up loving it.
Did you really?
I think I've talked my way into loving it.
Oh, yeah. I got to listen to the podcast
there
now.
There you go. Well, it's spoiler one. Heavy. But speaking of superfluous movies, did we need El Camino?
You know, probably like no, but if we're gonna go that route, did we need Breaking Bad?
I know.
Do
I
we
know.
Need anything?
I know, but at some point you're gonna milk your IP, you're gonna milk your intellectual property to the point of losing quality.
Absolutely
quality?
True.
Yeah.
I do not feel like we are anywhere near approaching Disney territory with Breaking Bad IP.
What territory?
Disney territory.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like, geez, like what speak weirdly, like I don't know why I know I know why I know this. It's because I watch college football. Like there's a freaking Jungle Cruise movie coming out, right? Like based on the Disney World ride, which okay. has I don't know if anyone's ever been on it, but there's a part where your guide has to shoot an animatronic hippo, and then of course, you know, timed perfectly for Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday, I'm sure that their portrayals of Indigenous peoples of North and South America will be nothing less than stunning.
They need to just go ahead and go fully into it and have you shoot an endangered species that's real obvious. Can we get an elephant? Can you shoot an elephant?
Can we just be honest with what the people want to see, Disney?
Maybe it would cut back on people actually shooting elephants if you could give them an animatronic one to shoot.
You could just, anytime you want, you don't even have to travel. You just go to Disney World and blast away. It's great.
Yeah. Hey, Don Jr., if you're listening.
I'm assured that he is. He tweets a lot about this podcast.
Mm-hmm. He not so much his father, but he definitely does. If you...
No, Don Jr. does. No, oh, yeah, big yeah. big Don, he's got bigger fish to fry. But Lil Don, he's a big Alabama take, dude.
Yeah.
He keeps up with it.
But yeah, I cringed when I heard about the El Camino movie, like 8 months ago, whenever it was kind of hinted it was happening, because
that was my initial reaction too.
Yeah. But two things, and this only happened recently, it only happened about 2 weeks ago, where two things kind of course corrected me. I thought, wait, Better Call Saul is really good.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. And Vince Gilligan is not only helming it, which, well, that would be obvious, but it was like his idea to do it. I don't think it was taken to him, but he came up with this
yes.
idea. So that made me feel better.
I feel like he has, based on Better Call Saul being amazing, another thing too, right? Like when I first heard of that, I cringed, right? It almost felt like if Mad Men had ended and it's like coming up next, the Pete Campbell Chronicles, you know, like I don't know, man. But it's great.
I'm not so sure Better Call Saul isn't better than Breaking Bad.
You know, if it's not better, it's at least different in a way that it's a totally different show, right? Like you really want to see it.
Yeah.
And because it adds something and it doesn't take away from Breaking Bad. It adds. And I feel at least at this point, he might shoot out a stinker for the next one. Vince Gilligan seems to have a pretty tight rein on his, you know, a pretty tight rein on his characters, if that makes sense. Like this felt like an outgrowth of the story that he was telling.
Yeah.
And as a result of him, maybe this is me putting words in his mouth or thoughts in his brain,
mm-hmm.
but a result of him being genuinely interested with what happens to Jesse, where does Jesse go? Who has Jesse become? And I'll say it right now. I think he nailed it.
Really? Okay. So that's my next question for you was, what did you think just overall?
I thought it was great. A friend of mine who also watched it compared it to, he said, because Gilligan, it's not, you know, Gilligan is used to having a whole season to tell this story. It kind of feels a little bit like a two-part episode, which I think is very fair. But I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you're touching on a lot of things I actually wanted to talk about, but continue.
Well, but it also felt like, and there was a little kind of that, like, kind of fan servicey, like, let's catch up with, you know, what are, I almost instantly wrote the words benign dirtbags when Badger and Skinny Pete showed up, right? Like, let's check in on these guys. But
Lovable dirtbags.
I felt like it used the let's check in on these guys cameos, or more than mm-hmm. cameos, in a way that actually buttressed the story, because it was interwoven with where Jesse had been and where he possibly might be going.
Where would he go? Yeah, if this actually happens to Jesse, if all this is going to happen to him, where's the first place he goes? That did make sense. I mean, you're going to introduce what, three new characters and say, no, he went to these guys whom you've never seen before.
And even things like flashbacks that probably necessarily didn't have to be in there. But the very first one with Mike Ehrmantraut framing it where he says, you can't put things right. And so, especially if you are like me, I did not rewatch like the last couple episodes of Breaking Bad to get ready for this. Like I looked at a summary. That kind of felt to me like it framed it emotionally, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good callback, and it was also kind of a emotional scene setting. And then the smash cut to him driving and screaming and crying in that El Camino was great.
And it did something too, which I almost rolled my eyes at, but the more I thought about it, the more I think I liked, was it went ahead and told you, look, he's going to end up in Alaska.
Yep.
Let's get that out of the way. Because the whole time I was thinking, well, he's going to make it to Alaska, probably. I didn't have a lot of doubt about that, which was interesting. Let's take that off the table for you. It was a bold choice, but I think Gilligan likes to make these choices where, he's famous for backing himself into a corner.
Yep.
But this one was even more brave to say that's not really what matters, where he ends up. What matters is how he gets there.
I think I 100% agree with that, because I would have been also too, because if it's like, oh, he dies in an alleyway somewhere, you know, Jesse, part of Breaking Bad is that Jesse is not Walt, and the ways mm-hmm. that he looks up to and that Walt shows affection to him are sweet and meaningful, but also essentially destructive in the way that it made, you know, it made Jesse complicit in Walt's worst actions, and Walt basically like sold Jesse, right? Like, cause he was mad,
yeah,
you know? So in a way, so I feel like, you know, like this was almost that who, now that everything has been stripped away from him, who is Jesse now?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the ending kind of leaves that up to our imagination, but it shows us who Jesse is now. And I think that the movie did such a good job of kind of stripping everything away from Jesse, especially with my favorite cameo, Todd, aka Jesse Plemons, one of my favorite actors.
Yes. Yeah. He's one of my favorites too.
Incredible in everything I've ever seen him in.
Yeah. Before we get into Todd, I have things to say about him too. I'm interested to hear what you have to say on Todd Alquist, I think his name is.
I believe that's his name. Yeah.
By focusing on Jesse, the tone suddenly changed. Did you notice that?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. It's much less hijinks and MacGyvering my way out of this dastardly meth business, and more about dealing with like trauma or mental anguish brought on him by Walt, and then of course much, much worse by those Nazi guys.
So I almost wish I hadn't done this, but I was okay. I looked at I'm blanking on her name. She writes for Pop Culture Happy Hour, and if she's listening,
Linda Holmes,
thank you. She wrote, I think, a very insightful summary of this, where she said, Breaking Bad has always been a moral show, and this episode was the stuff that Walt didn't have to deal with, because Walt they did allow Walt to go out on his own terms, which I agree. And this is
you agree happened, or you agree with that ending?
Oh, I agree that they kind of Walt kind of got to go out on his own terms, right?
Like, which I did not agree with.
Well,
I feel like the last episode of Breaking Bad is one of the biggest disappointments in television.
Oh, really? Okay.
I do. That may be another podcast.
Interesting.
I just felt like it was such a great show, and then they let him save the day.
Well, I think that was that's kind of exactly what she was getting at, and what I mean, where he went out on his own terms. Mm-hmm. He got to save the day. He got to kind of sidestep what he had done to Jesse. And then this movie kind of says, well, we the viewer don't get to look away from that.
Yeah.
Don't get to look away from what was done to Jesse.
And it changed the tone of the show, I think, to a much more serious. And I mean, it had a hijink moment or two with the sort of the shootout in the welders party scene. But it was a different show, and even looked different.
It did. It was more. Well, you know, it was. I thought it was incredibly shot.
Mm-hmm.
Movie, right? Like it was very interesting to look at, and Gilligan obviously likes to play like there's a great scene, right, the great scene where it gets real jittery. It feels very jittery as Jesse's kind of tearing the apartment apart. But it felt, how do I say it, almost like it didn't move as fast. Not that it was a slow movie film, but it felt like
that.
It was really stuck on Jesse, not in a bad way.
Yeah, I thought about that when it was playing, and wondered. It was slower paced. It really was,
yeah.
And it really didn't feel a part of Breaking Bad the show. It felt a part of Breaking Bad the universe.
Yep.
And because of that, I wasn't so sure that I wouldn't have liked to have seen like a 4 or 6 part show, but I think it would have lost its weight. If it had done that,
I would have been interested to see that too. Although, with the tone it was striking, I wonder if 4 episodes might not have dragged.
Yeah, or have been less emotional.
Yep, One of the things I made a note of this, especially when he went to see Badger and Skinny Pete. But I feel like so much of this show, but especially this episode, is people bad at expressing their emotions and expressing their feelings, desperately trying to do that, to express their emotions, to say that something mattered. I feel like that happened with Badger and Skinny Pete, where they're trying to show their friend that they love him. Uh-huh. I feel like it happened when Jesse calls his parents. You know, there's so many flashbacks where it's either, you know, I was very impressed, just, I don't even know how to put it into words, with the writing, the facility of writing that it takes to show that, to show these folks who are really not good at expressing themselves, trying to express themselves.
Yeah. It definitely fits that this is a movie more about emotion
yep.
than action.
Yep. Yeah.
And Breaking Bad was a show about action.
And you know, Jet, like you kind of what you centered in before, like Jesse is so hurt. I mean, Aaron Paul did a awesome job portraying, you know, he went so far from a, you know, science bitch to to, you know, this guy who barely has anything to say, who's constantly flashing back to the worst moments of his life.
Yes.
Who's trying to make, you know, he's still a criminal, right? But like he seems like he's trying to do better than he's done yes. before.
Yeah, it's almost like they had to put a few of those flashbacks in so you could get a sense of who he was.
Yeah, yes.
To kind of help you remember, hey, this was the guy who would say, yeah, bitch, to things, and he's not doing that anymore.
Yeah. No, the only the flashbacks, I felt like the flashbacks did some real heavy lifting. Just yeah. showing you, yeah, kind of like you said, the person he was before he got put in this really dire situation.
Yeah, over the top dire, maybe, but still.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was kind of glad, speaking of that, they did not seem to, a choice Gilligan made was, they didn't seem like he wanted to dwell too much on what happened to Jesse, show it to you, but not, revel in it, you know, the way some of these torture porny things do. They were, he's yeah. so much more interested in, okay, here's what happened. I'm showing you enough to kind of frame it. And now, mm-hmm. who's Jesse? What's he going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, showing you enough to get the pathos of it so that we can go on.
Precisely, but not kind of wallowing in it.
Yeah. I do think that the talking to you made me realize something, I think, that this might be Gilligan's response to everyone getting caught up in the anti-hero aspect of Walt.
So I was kind of thinking about that, too. Because it is kind of like you said, like that was very action oriented, right? And you're kind of like, we kind of touched on this, I think last time we talked in Unbelievable, where it's like you kind of get excited, right? Because you're like, oh, how are they going to get out of this one? You know, like they're figuring it out.
And that was Breaking Bad to a T.
Yep. I think if you really watch the show, right, like it's deeply interested in the consequences of Walt's actions, right? Like it's deeply interested in, you know, Walt's kind of like he's presented as the guy who's kind of being bullied sort of by life or whatever. And then you realize that in mm-hmm. fact, he's the bully.
Yeah.
But it felt like the opposite, like you didn't have as many of those, like you didn't really have a, like, well, how's he going to get out of this one this time? So much as you had, someone just trying to get out of town and working through what Walt and life and himself did.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were going to circle back around to Todd, which is my next question. What did you had a favorite part or scene? Was it Todd?
My favorite scene in the movie was everything with Todd. I'm laughing because it's not funny, but it's kind of got that gallows humor, right? I just need one more favor, just one more favor.
Yes.
But I think the scene that resonated so powerfully was the scene where Jesse gets the gun from the glove box, and he basically has a gun on Todd, and Todd's like, you know what, you helped me bury the cleaning lady, you've done such a good job, just give me the gun, Jesse, just give me the gun, we'll get you some pizza, what do you like, pepperoni? And Jesse gives him the gun. He starts crying, and he gives him the gun.
Tell me more about what you mean when you talk about the glove in the the gun in the glove box.
The glove in the gun box is a Agatha Christie novel, certainly.
So the gun in the glove box, Jesse finds that and almost uses it, takes it out for sure, you know, has it, and that was ground zero for you, or that's kind of how you were phrasing it.
Yeah, it was a very, you know, it was, I don't know if I'll be able to put it into words, because it was a scene that I felt like I experienced very viscerally. But, you know, we have a little bit of dramatic irony, right? Because we know that, that Jesse's gonna kill Todd. We know that he's gonna murder him. Or
yeah, that's
kill
I think
him.
That's key. That's key to that scene.
To this scene. But you know, this bit where he's like, you know, hey man, you did good helping me bury my cleaning lady. She was as honest as the bit where he says, You wanna say a few words? Was
yeah. Jesse, you never met her, but would you wanna say
yeah,
something?
Yeah, you wanna say a few words.
And I murdered her.
But once again, Jesse Plemons doing wonderful work with Todd is this kind of
so good,
you know, dead-eyed enigma.
This this arrestedly developmentally arrested psychopath, I would say.
You know, you almost feel like he's like a nasty dog that you could just be petting, and he's just going to bite you out of the blue for no reason.
Which is a weird analogy because he treats Jesse like a dog.
He treats Jesse like his pet.
Yeah, but you were saying though.
But you know, when Jesse and again, Aaron Paul just nailed this scene where he just starts crying, holding that gun and he gives it back. He gives it back to Todd. And this is a guy who, like, you know, like Jesse hates this guy, and you know, he's not giving up the gun cause he forgives him. He's not giving up the gun for anything like that. He's not giving up the gun for pizza. Yeah, like he's giving up the gun because he is as broken as it is possible for a human being to be, about at that moment. And I feel like, you know, sometimes really great drama comes, right? You're just stripping your character down to their basics.
There were it had a feel of Theon Greyjoy almost.
Yeah, you know, actually, that's really not a bad analogy. I wouldn't have ever thought of that.
Though that one was stretched out over the course of a season and a half, and this one was stretched out over 4 minutes and much better done, perhaps.
And much better done, and you know how I said that Vince Gilligan didn't dwell on kind of the horrors inflicted on Jesse?
Exactly.
Game of Thrones did the opposite of that. Like, there was no, like, little 4 minutes of character development, like 23 minutes of, what are we cutting off of Theon this week?
Well, Vince Gilligan should have done a season of Game of Thrones as showrunner, and maybe they would have got that thing back in line.
Can we, Don Jr., if you're listening, can you get that change.org petition started for us here? You got some pull with the big man, right?
That?
Yeah, he's not too busy, right?
Instead of digging up dirt on the Bidens, could he work on a reboot of Game of Thrones, please? But yes, you're right. It was, and putting it in that perspective helps me appreciate this movie more. At first, when I first wrapped it up or hit the home button on the Roku Friday night after watching El Camino, I thought, that was good. That was fairly satisfying. There's really nothing wrong with it, but I still walked away thinking that I didn't need it. But now, talking to you, and you had mentioned Linda Holmes' piece on NPR after I read through it, and talking to you today, I think I see why. I think everyone needed it who was the Breaking Bad, the Breaking Bad fan that I was, which is to say, I was the fan who was pulling for Walt damn near the whole time. Even in that last season, I was like, yeah, well, you know, he's still the protagonist, right? I'm still sort of, I'm guilty of just like, if you present a protagonist to me, I'm with him or her. You know, I'm like, okay, all right, I'll root for this person. I'm guilty of that. I'm not the kind of person who tries to dole out my moral understanding of the universe via television.
Well, it does give you a chance to kind of, right, like indulge in imaginative play, right? Like that kind of asking, like, what if, you know, what if this is, but at the same time, I get the sense that, you know, Gilligan does not think that Walter White is a hero.
No, I don't think Vince Gilligan ever did. But I was guilty of thinking it up until the last three episodes of that final season.
You know, it's amazing to the discipline to create such a dynamic, interesting character as Walt was. And I really think Vince Gilligan did not fall in love with him. If that makes sense, where, you know, do you ever get the sense that like an author, when authors kind of fall in love with their characters, things kind of go off the rails
and they treat them too preciously. Yeah.
Yep. It's kind of like what happened with, it's the reason there's only one or two good Hannibal Lecter movies. Because after a certain point, everybody involved just fell in love with Hannibal Lecter and it got very dull and it just went off the rails. I feel like Vince Gilligan never fell in love with Walter White.
Which was amazing because he let him do some of the most miraculous, fascinating, interesting things to get out of jams.
Absolutely. But it was always going to crumble on him. And I think that if he had been in love with Walter White, El Camino might have been a very different movie.
Right. And but did it, I say?
But it wasn't.
I'm having trouble remembering if I just thought this or said this, which is the name of my memoir. wouldn't Breaking Bad have been totally different if we got to replay it all through Jesse's point of view rather than Walter?
Absolutely.
And this is that, I think. El Camino is kind of that,
in
a way.
I think so. Yeah, this felt like Jesse kind of crawling back into the light.
Mm-hmm.
Because Walt put him in some pretty Walt and his own actions and a lot of other things put him in a really dark place.
Yeah, and deservedly
so. And he's coming
into
the light. And deservedly so, yeah. But he's coming back into the light.
Which to me, this is a twofold thing going on. Gilligan is saying, "We need to remember that this was not about necessarily Walt, but the destruction Walt brought." And second, I think he's saying that he did fall in love with Jesse, even though he never fell in love with Walt.
he really may have. Because obviously Jesse was the one that was taking up real estate in his head.
and he famously was supposed to get killed off in like episode one or two.
Yep.
And he decided not to. So maybe he just sort of fell in love with Aaron Paul's acting and what he brought to it, which is understandable.
And I think he did, you know, he did kind of bring... You know, without Jesse, we didn't get Breaking Bad from Jesse's point of view, but we did get Jesse as an occasional point of view character or a sympathetic mm-hmm. point of view character in Breaking mm-hmm. Dad, mm-hmm. which I think did kind of help make it the show it was.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That nails it right there. That's a good stopping point, too. I think I like it a lot more than I originally thought. Which I still liked it. I thought it was very, very worth my time. So.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a wasted 2 hours by any means.
No. And I'm looking, it makes me look forward to Better Call Saul a little more, even though I think maybe around season two of Better Call Saul, they kind of were stuffing plot in there in order to kill time, but still fun.
And all right. watching Bob Odenkirk.
Yes.
He is never a again, never a wasted hour. He is
no, it's
a lot
not.
Of fun.
All right, well, that will do it for this episode of Taking It Down. We want to thank Kelly Duncan for being on earlier, and we want to thank Donovan once again for being on. Donovan, I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
And again, maybe you and I will sit down and talk Irishman before it's all said and done.
I would love to talk about that movie.
All right. We'll kind of loosely plan on that. So for those of you listening, you know, if you have ideas for things you want us to cover, shoot them to us at thealabamatake@gmail.com or any of the social media outlets out there that we're on. We don't do Snapchat because we're not 12, but you can, I mean, we're way past 12, but you can get in touch with us. And we love to hear from people. We love it when you tweet at us. We love it when you message us on Facebook or Instagram. And don't forget about The Alabama Take. That's just the main podcast. You can get it anywhere you get your podcast. You can subscribe to us, Taking It Down. Leave us a review if you want. That sort of helps the algorithm, speaking of algorithms. Anyway, this is the wrap for Taking It Down, Episode 8. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk some more pop culture stuff, movies, music, TV for sure. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. See you next time.